Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 63, and this is our last podcast before Christmas. We will have next Monday, Christmas Day. Of course, the Steelers will be playing, so we'll do the podcast on Tuesday. So let Dave and I be amongst the earliest to wish you a very happy, merry Christmas and a healthy and safe Christmas as well.
David, I'd like to start, you know, it is the holiday season and all, and, you know, we probably don't ever get as festive as we probably should have this time of year. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the Immaculate Reception, and as everybody knows, that falls on Festivus as well, December 23rd. So a very, very important time for Steeler fans, I think, this time of season. So I'd like to open up with a very touching, David, email that we got, a holiday touching email that we received to the Terrible Podcast from Robert Gates. It says, there is no formal greeting in this one, by the way, David. He gets
just gets right to it.
Yeah, he knows us. he knows us. From Robert Gates. I honestly tried not to write after listening to your condemnation of the coaches and Ben for panicking under pressure and effing up. He doesn't use effing. He uses the extended word of that. Effing up an easy problem and then lying about it. Weak need SOBs. I'm assuming that's us.
Us or them. Us or
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. In fact, I think I might write better than Robert Gates. Can you believe that? that's something there. We all now understand you know more than Mike Tomlin and his staff about coaching an NFL team. Mike is slow-witted and caused the team a huge loss due to his ineptitude. Fire his dumb ass. There's that ass word again. We can't get away from it. We get it. I don't know who the we is. I assume him and everybody that listens to the show. The only Steeler more stupid than Tomlin was evidently Ben, who should have known he could run lots of plays in 22 seconds. Hell, Haley only needed 4.65833 seconds to put together a sequence of plays for potential scenarios. What was the problem? How did that collection of dummies get to be 11-3 with not a brain among them? Now that you have clearly and convincingly explained everything to us, I can see it would have been like taking candy from a baby. I really wish you had been on the sideline.
Wait, you too. You too. You too had been on the sideline. TWO, me, you and me. I really wish you too had been on the sideline.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, you too.
Yeah. Yeah, I just found the email, obviously.
Thanks. You can help my awful reading. my awful reading skills. I really wish you two had been on the sideline with your stopwatches and superior thought process so we could have won the game.
Well, me too.
It's a long way from Vegas, but if the front office heard your podcast, I'm sure they will make sweeping changes before next season. There's no solution for this embarrassing team. Thanks for opening all our eyes, Robert. You're quite welcome.
He didn't sign it.
No, he didn't sign it either. He knows us, you know.
He didn't say goodbye.
Yeah. No Merry Christmas.
No Merry Christmas. Nothing.
Nothing there. Nothing. Yeah. Listen, you know, what fun would this show be if all we did was glad ass everybody, you know, pat everybody on the back all the time. In no way, shape, or form, David, I never heard you say that you wanted Mike Tomlin or any of the coaches or Ben Roethlisberger fired or cut.
Never once. You've never heard me say that about it. And people criticize me for that.
Yeah, and neither have I. I mean, it was and the reason we have been forced to spend so much time on the end of that game is even after the Jesse James overturned touchdown, which, you know, I'm done talking about that now. I mean, I think we both agree that we can move on from that. But even the final few seconds show you know,
it's complicated stuff.
It is complicated, and that was a very winnable game still. And we're going to talk some more. I know a lot of people are out there saying, my God, they're like, Robert, can't we just move on from this game and get to the Texas game? We will, but the way the NFL work week works is that, especially with us in this show, is David and I usually on right after the day after the game. So you get initial reaction, initial, you know, two times through the game, hot topic kind of stuff. And that's what we generally normally do on a Wednesday or on Monday. On Wednesday, you know, it's usually a continuation. You'll go through the tape thoroughly and continue to talk about anything else that might be presented. And that's kind of what we did this week. I'm focusing a little bit more on the end of game situation. And then, you know, on the Friday show, because the offensive coordinators do not talk to the media until Thursday, that's when we have to wrap up any loose ends or any kind of questions that we have. So unfortunately, this week, for the third time this season, we are talking about a loss. And when you talk about losses, you tend to probably, dissect them more than you do wins. Am I correct, David?
Absolutely. Look, I mean, you know, that's like anything. If the Steelers do everything perfectly, there's not a lot to say. You pat them on the back and move on and talk about the next thing. This isn't true of just the Steelers. It's true of everything that we do in our lives. You know, one of the things, great athletes, it's one of the things that separates the most successful people, not just in athletics, but in a lot of things, are people willing to work on what they don't do well. And you talk to great athletes. And what do they do after practice? They're not working on the 15-foot jumper that they hit all day. They're working on going to their left and hitting the bank shot that they don't do very well. And it's, you know, just take examples in our own lives. If you're a golfer or a tennis player, it's a lot easier to go out, you know, if you've got a great, you know, if you're great at hitting a lob wedge, to go hit a bunch of lob wedges rather than going in the trap and scraping it out of the trap 100 times to work on your sand game. We all like to practice things we're good at. And the way you get better is obviously practicing things you're not good at. And we, you know, as analysts, we are not short on. I hate this part of the podcast where we occasionally defend ourselves. So I apologize for that. I don't think we're short on compliments. We're not short on dissecting what goes wrong. That's what we're doing. So, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah, you know the hardest.
Got too many of those emails lately,
right? And you know the thing is, David, and boy, I get this past week, especially due to the Jesse James thing, I've been accused so much of are you even a fan? And you know, even the comments I made about Chris Boswell and the Pro Bowl and all like that. Look, I mean, the hardest part, I think, transitioning into being what I like to think I am now, which is a good blogger and you know, a good podcast analyst, is the fact that your fandom seems to – you have to let go a little bit of your fandom. You know,
Absolutely. You try it because you're trying to be objective. And, you know, part of being a fan is you wanting it to go your way when you know that deep down in places you don't like to go – that it didn't go your way.
Right. That was the hardest thing in my early – look, I used to be the guy that put a hole through the wall in my 20s when, you know, the Steelers lost to the Chargers on in the AFC Championship game and all those things. I used to be that guy. I get it. But, you know, the longer you do this thing like what David and I do, you have to kind of become – less fanatical, I think, and try to look at all aspects of this thing. I'm never going to accuse myself being a full-fledged media guy because I'm not, or a journalist, or whatever you want to call it. But I try to open eyes in different areas that those guys don't. And I think David has tried to do that during his career as well, too. But there is a point in our careers, I think, where that you have to release a little bit of the fandom. Now, that does not mean that every game that I do not root for a Steelers win. I do. Just as I do with the Pirates, as I do with the Penguins, all that. I wish every one of those teams could go undefeated. But the fact of the matter is that just doesn't happen. And then you have to talk about the good on top of the bad. And bad sells sometimes better than good, to be quite honest with you. As far as
Rogers, the radio guys in Pittsburgh will tell you the phone will ring 10 times more often when the Steelers lose rather than when they win. And there are a couple guys in Pittsburgh who, you know, your job is to have the most important thing as a radio guy. And maybe I didn't do it well enough, is to have an audience. And there are guys in Pittsburgh who are fantastic at it, and they play on some of them play on that. And, good for them.
So Robert Gates, there are, I'm sure, other Steelers podcasts out there with tens of listeners that will cure your fanboy needs.
Thanks for the email. I want to talk about this Chris Boswell thing for one second, because it's funny. I generally see, as I mentioned Wednesday, I generally see, most of your tweets, almost all your tweets. I see them sooner or later, but sometimes I tweet without having seen what you've tweeted. And, people who listen to the podcast know how affectionate I have been of both Sean Sweezum and Chris Boswell. They are fantastic kickers. They're two of the better kickers in NFL history during their time with the Steelers. It's just simply fact. Boswell's been great, and he's having an unbelievable season. I have also said on Twitter, before Chris Boswell went on these four game-winning field goals and did all the magical things he's done, that I don't think there's a better kicker in the history of the game than Justin Tucker. And if somebody had to kick a field goal for my life, Justin Tucker is going to be that guy, because I feel like they should start deducting points from Justin Tucker when he doesn't hit it dead down the middle. You know, that's how good he is. And I had people throwing all sorts of stats at me. You know, he's missed three kicks this year. Well, the reality is, you're right. Justin Tucker has missed three of his 32 field goal attempts. He missed a 40-yarder, and he missed a 58 and a 62-yarder, and he has not missed an extra point. So, if you want to be realistic about it, Justin Tucker's missed one kick inside 57 yards, one kick on the season. It doesn't take anything away from the great season Chris Boswell's had. But the reality is, Justin Tucker's probably the better kicker. Chris Boswell's had, we're talking the elite of the elite. Chris Boswell's had a great season. Chris Boswell's had more big moments, which isn't, the kicker doesn't really get to choose when he has big moments. Chris Boswell's had those moments, and he has succeeded in those moments. He made the Pro Bowl. I'm thrilled. Dave's thrilled. We're thrilled to see, any Steeler guy make it. We're thrilled to see Allie make it, even though, maybe there's a question as to whether he's deserving, just as we're disappointed to not see Cam make it. And even though the three guys who made it ahead of Cam probably are very deserving. It's it's honors, and people like to see their team's players get honors. It's no disparagement of Chris Boswell talking about the greatness of Justin Tucker. Okay? And some people went off on Dave more so than me, but Justin Tucker is, watch Justin Tucker, because he might be the greatest kicker we'll see in our lifetimes for what he's doing right now. The guy doesn't miss. Yeah, he's missed three kicks this year. If you want to count 58 and 62 and say Boz's percentage is better and all that stuff, and Boz has missed two extra points and Tucker hasn't, that's fine. Nobody's against Chris Boswell here. We're just talking about how great Justin Tucker is. Okay, end of that rant.
Yeah, exactly. And look, two misses. I can't remember if one of those were blocks for Chris Boswell between.
Yeah, one of Boz's three misses was a block.
Between 30 and 39 yards, and then missed another one from 40 to 49 yards. Like I said in my original tweet, Chris Boswell has been fantastic this year. And Chris Boswell, in my opinion, is already a better kicker than Sean Swisham. I am so glad Chris Boswell is on the Steelers. I have praised him numerous times this year. But
got blocked.
Huh? Yeah.
You got blocked? Did you get blocked?
Yeah, he blocked me. Speaking of blocked, I got blocked. And look, at some point, it seems like all these Steelers players blocked me on Twitter at one point or another. That's why bloggers need burner accounts so they can follow.
All I know is Cam and David DeCastro, who I know both a little bit, follow me, and Chris Hope likes us, so I'm good.
Exactly. Was it close this year? But I go in the boat with David, and if there's one guy I want out there this season to make me a 55-yard field goal with the game on the line, no offense to Boswell, it's Tucker. And I'll admit, it's close. But if I had to choose one of the two, I'm going to go with Tucker. Okay.
One last thing. If somebody can look this up, because I spent a couple hours, and I don't have a couple more hours in the next week to do it. People love to throw out the Heinz, kicking in Heinz Field and how hard it is. I think there is some historical record that suggests that it was difficult to kick in Heinz Field. I'd like to see that record since they closed the other end zone, which is now, I don't know if this is the second or third season that it's been closed, because we haven't had a lot of inclement weather in these games the past couple of years. But it sure as heck doesn't seem to me like guys are missing field goals in Heinz Field very often, any more than any other place. Obviously, domes are different. But, I think it was a legitimate point to point out in the past the difficulty at kicking in Heinz Field. I don't think, hope maybe somebody will ask Chris Boswell and write about it, if he finds it more difficult than the other outdoor stadiums. With the wind situation being a little different with the closed end. So, okay.
All right.
See if somebody can give us the Heinz Field. What I was looking for was the Heinz Field stats, over the last 3 years versus the first, 15 years.
All right. The coordinator spoke on Thursday, David. So, there's a couple items that I think, some people are not going to like us to touch on them, but I think it's our duty to do it. Talking about the final few plays there, Todd Haley was asked, is there anything that he'd like to do differently next time in terms of the last drive against New England? He said, have a first touchdown to be a touchdown number one. Obviously talking about the Jesse James. He says, I know Coach Tomlin has talked about this a bunch, but the only thing I'll say is that what we call an incomplete or out of bounds situation after the ball was ruled an incompletion. So in other words, the play after the overturned call was a play. Was a play that they call an incomplete or out of bounds situation. We don't want the ball in the field of play there without a timeout. I'm never going to question Ben's decision of thinking, hey, Bay, Darius Hayward Bay could get out of bounds. But as far as scenarios, we're in an incomplete or out of bounds situation. The clock will not be running if things go the way they're supposed to go. Then you're getting the guys on the field for each particular play you wanted on the field, and you're counting on having three shots at the end zone. Thoughts? Well, let me add what else he adds here on the Darius. So he says, he goes on to talk about how, again, both guys thought it would go different, and it didn't, and it's a great learning situation as far as that goes, because we practice that every Friday. We go through the last seven plays, incomplete or out of bounds. You can't catch the ball if you can't get out of bounds, and we got one caught in bounds.
It's impossible. It's impossible, I think, to expect Darius Hayward Bay with, 7 yards to go to the sideline and trying to make a play in a big moment. It's impossible for him to know exactly where Malcolm Butler is when he's behind him. When Bay's running to the sideline and knows and has to think and rightly thinks that he's as fast as anybody on the field. If it's Le'Veon Bell and he's catching a swing pass and he's staring the defender, the DB closing on him all alone 2 yards in front of him, Maybe Le'Veon Bell can drop a pass. I would even think that's even incredibly difficult, but maybe he can do it. But Darius Heyward-Bey can't, you know, he can't know to intentionally drop that pass. That's a bridge too far for me.
He's been unintentionally dropping passes his entire career. The one time you want him to drop a pass, he catches it. To me, that seems like a very unnatural act, right?
Yeah, that's too much to ask.
And I find it a bit, I wonder, now it got me wondering how many other teams around the league practice that. That aspect in practices every week.
Specifically, the end of game situations?
The incomplete or out of bounds situation.
Yeah, like, it's
in other words, you know, how many teams actually work on situations where the receiver needs to make a decision of dropping the football?
I don't think it's possible. I don't think a guy who's conditioned all his life to catch, you know, guys who their whole job is to catch the football, to, you know, it's like a line drive at a second baseman, you know, with a guy on first. You know, do you intend, you know, you catch it on the back of the glove and drop it so you can turn the double play rather than catching the ball. I mean, if you think about that before every pitch, you might be prepared to do it. But you see very few guys do it. And you don't want too many guys to do it because the chance of screwing it up might be reasonably high. So I just think I don't think it's, as you say, it's an unnatural act to try to convince yourself to do something that you're conditioned to do in the speed of the game and the moment. So that sounds incredibly odd to me. I'm surprised he said that.
All right, and he goes on to say, yada, yada, Antonio Brown's normally in there where Heyward-Bey is in that position.
No way Antonio Brown's dropping that
no,
ball.
No, hell no. He ain't dropping that either. No way in hell is that happening. And he was asked, why wasn't, you know, Martavis Bryant on the field in that situation? He says because it was that play and because Martavis had missed time this past week, you know, he wouldn't have known, you know, where to line up or whatever on that play. So that's why. And then another kind of damning statement, I guess, if you will, Todd Haley says is, and again, he says they made us hot. They, meaning the New England Patriots defense, made us hot. And by that means they blitzed and made Darius Heyward-Bey effectively become the hot receiver in this situation. And I forget who else was leaking out on that other side. Maybe it was Le'Veon Bell. They made us hot, which caused a pressure situation. Ben got on the run, and again, I won't question his decision of thinking Heyward-Bey could get out of bounds or in the end zone, but as it went, it didn't work out that way. And he goes on to say at some point is that that the Patriots didn't where was it? Okay. Like I said, though, they made us hot, which they hadn't done all day. Look, that one time that you don't think the Patriots are going to do something, that's when they're going to do something. That's called good coaching right there. Remember that early this season where Tony Romo was doing that game about near the goal line, and the Patriots showed something that they hadn't done in a while, and Tony says, you know why, Jim? Analytics. That's a classic clip from earlier this season here.
And by the way, just on that, and I've talked to Mike about this at various times. It's self-scouting. And Mike talked about it during the bye week, and that's generally when he does bring up things like that, is teams that do – and look, the Steelers do this. I'm not critiquing anybody or anything. All teams should scout themselves for their tendencies, just like you scout an opponent. And if you see tendencies with an opponent, certain formations, they do this out of this formation all the time. That gives you a leg up. So when you see it. Teams that are really good, they self-scout and they show that formation because they've shown it a bunch of times and do a certain thing and then do something completely different out of it, you know, halfway through the season. That's what Romo was talking about. That's what Dave's referring to. You know, knowing what you do, not just knowing what your opponent does.
All right. Back to this end of game thing here. If you want to call that play, in other words, that's why Martavis was not on the field for that final play, because he wasn't in obviously in that first play, and the clock's running there. You can't get him on the field for the second play. This goes back, in my opinion, to, and Todd was also asked about, our situations where, where you wish you had two plays called. And let me see if I can find that response here where he goes to that. Yeah,
you just lost 5 listeners there.
Yeah, I know. People say you should have had two plays called. You don't know what the down and distance is going to be in that situation. And Todd says, no, there are a lot of times we have two plays called in the huddle. But again, that was an incomplete or out of bounds situation. You cannot, in that situation, get caught in the field of play. And again, we call plays accordingly. That would normally be AB coming across the field, which will get a lot of attention. We had 4 guys in the end zone. Like I said, though, they made us hot, blah, blah, blah. Major beef the whole time here is, you've got to assume that
worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario is going to happen. And what you had the time. We went through the whole Zapruder timeline there, David. Over 4 minutes from the time after Jesse James caught that touchdown to the next snap took place there. And almost 1 full minute after that, Tony Corrente announced that the play had been overturned. At least get some sort of play run, that goes into the end zone up to 10 yards, if you will, that can be called to give yourself a chance, because the worst case scenario did happen. And basically what Todd just told us right there was, after Darius Hayward Bay was tackled inbounds, Ben had 2 options: spike it or run some sort of a fake spike play. And he ran the latter. And for Todd then to say you can't throw an interception there, well, Todd, you can't not give your quarterback another play there. So am I doing this wrong?
I know. I'm agreeing with everything you said. You know, I think it lines up with what we said. I'm a little surprised, Todd. If you throw a receiver a ball in play, his job is to catch it. That's either the quarterback's got to throw it away, not check down to him, not throw the drag. It wasn't a check down. It was a drag route. So don't throw it to him if you don't want him to catch it.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to know that it's a being that route's part of the combination. That's why it's in there. So you
right. And so either Ben shouldn't throw it to him, or if he throw it, maybe, DHB can't see what's behind him. I mean, he doesn't see what Ben sees. He sees the ball and sees what's, then in front of him. So none of this is on DHB, in my opinion. Of course, he's trying to get out of bounds. He tried to get out of bounds. The other guy made a good play.
And hindsight, and Monday morning quarterbacking and all, why even put in a play
with
that option there? Because I understand he and Todd Haley would argue with me that it's an out of bounds or incomplete situation, but my argument back with him is you have to be prepared for that to be neither of those two in that situation there,
it is interesting that they sitting here while we're talking about it, it is interesting that they practice that and that they have a term for it. Again, I think we're both in agreement. If you throw the ball to DHB, you have to assume he's going to catch it. So
No, not really.
Well, he's going to try to catch it.
He's going to try to catch it.
Yeah. So again, the second, the other thing that just I'll just this will be my last thing on this. It's just Ben was not as calm and composed as I would have liked on that second play. So 28 seconds left. Again, if I tell Ben Roethlisberger right now that he has 28 seconds to run 2 plays at the 10-yard line, he's going to say to me, that's an eternity. No problem. We can run our whole playbook. We can run any two plays. We could even run a running play on the first play and get up and run the second play. I can get two plays done in 25 seconds. No problem. That's not what happened in the game.
You would – I would like to know, and I'm sure Ben can just audible a play out of Blue Moon. But the thing is with the clock – here's the thing, though, David, is as soon as DHB – as soon as that happens, Ben's automatically, it looks like, given kind of a clock signal, right? And he talked about how guys have to line up almost wherever they're at. And we talked about this the other day. Two wide receivers get on the line of scrimmage, and everybody else pretty much freezes where they're at. So whatever he was yelling immediately after DHB got down, got the entire offense into that mode to line up where they were. How much time would it have taken? Plus two, DHB was coming from the left sideline. If you call a play that he's got to be lined up on the other side of the field, you know, he's got to go all the way over to the, you know what I'm saying there? And I realized there was, what did we say? There was 22 seconds or something when DHB was tackled out of bounds. I mean, in hindsight, 22 seconds is a long time.
But you can get everybody from where they were and the ball snapped in 12 seconds. I mean, I've no doubt that, you know, DHB could get across the field. Eli could get to the other side of the field. They just ran the whole play, and he ran across the field. It took 6 seconds. So I have no doubt that they can get in position. You can say the verbiage you need in six more seconds. So, you know, it doesn't seem to me to be a stretch to snap the ball with 10 seconds with everybody where you need them to be and having a play called.
Yeah, but then we go back to, you know, Ben's being told, don't clock it. That's all he's being told probably, is being, don't clock it, don't clock it, don't clock it. I guess what I'm getting at is hard. What would Drew Brees or Tom Brady have done in that situation? Well, A, they wouldn't have been in that situation. They would have had a play call, right? it's just hard to think that to expect Ben to pull a play out of the air and get them set and run it.
15 years at the position, that's what you got to do. That's why you get $23 million.
Yeah, I suppose. And I think he did that with a fake spike, so to speak. But, I mean, you know, not, obviously not a normal play there. All right, and look, if any of you have stomach for it, go to Patriots.com, and Bill Belichick and Scott Zolak break down several plays from the game, and one of them is the fake spike play. It's worth watching if you ask me. Like I said, if you got a strong stomach. All right, Keith Butler's comments on his defense. For the most part, I think Keith sounded like he was happy with his defensive scheme. He was asked how Sean Davis played overall. He said he did as much as he could. I think in terms of evaluating our players and stuff like that, we try to keep that in house. We tried to help them. There are some technical things, and he knows this, and we coached it before and after, that he has got to take care of. I think we'll be better the next time we play them. He goes on to be asked, where was it here? Is it a matter? If you take him away, him being Gronkowski, and what do you leave open? Butler says there is a lot of things that went on in that game that we tried to do, and to explain it in terms of it would take an hour to tell you what went on and how we had help. We had people assigned to him most of all the game, and rarely did we have him singled up and all that stuff. Hey, Keith, I got hours. If you want to give me a call and I'll be glad to listen to that long explanation there. He goes on to be asked, do you think it's doable next time, or do you have to go back to the drawing board again? And this is obviously about Rob Gronkowski. I think you always have to go back to the drawing board every time you play. You have to do something a little bit different. You do the same thing, people will kill you, much less Tom Brady and Gronk. They'll nail your butt to the wall, So you better have something a little bit different next time we play them. I'm sure we will. We do that every game, though. We have a game plan for every game, and we'll adjust that game plan if we have to play them again. We'll game plan. You know, not a lot. There to chew on.
Let's close the book on the Pats. Okay, the Texans, man. It's hard to get excited for this game. Now, yeah, I said that for the Packers game. I expected them to win by 30 points. I don't necessarily expect the Steelers to go into Texas Christmas Day and win this game by 30 points, but it's still hard to get excited about playing the Texans. The offensive line, the guys at Bleacher Report, Doug Farrar's got a bunch of scouts who work with him, and each guy has a position group. Doug does the quarterbacks and the centers. They have a guy who does the offensive and defensive line. This week they did an article on the five worst players at each position, and two of the Texans' offensive linemen graded out as the bottom five. Now these are all starters, and the caveat to all of this is these guys are starters in the NFL, so they are the elite of the elite at what they do. But you know, Giacomini, the right tackle, and Xavier Suofilo, the left guard, both ranked there. And the center, I think Mance is not on the list because he didn't get enough snaps during the course of the season. If the Steelers, you know, it should be, hypothetically, going in on paper, a big day for the Steelers front seven.
Were you trying to say Giacomini?
Giacomini.
Okay. He is their right tackle, and he has – I believe he was one of their original five this year.
Yep.
Xavier Suofilo is their left guard, and he is one of their original five this year. And you're saying –
those are the only two, right?
And you're saying both those guys are on the worst graded.
Yes.
All right. Greg Mance is a backup. He's been playing, I think, some right guard this year. Now they've lost their center this week. He was placed on IR.
And by the way, Martin was on the list as well. He's the center who is not going to play.
Right. So now Mance is sliding over from right guard to play center, which he's done that before. But and some might say he's a better center than he is a guard. So at least they got that going for him. So Mance is going to play center. Chad Slade, who I believe is a rookie, is going to now play at right guard for them. And Jeff Allen.
Julian Davenport playing left tackle?
Yes, that's where I'm going. Jeff Allen, who is normally a guard, has been playing left tackle, but he suffered, I think, an ankle injury this past week, and they don't expect him to play. So Julian Davenport will have to make, I think it'll be his third start of the season at left tackle.
That's the Bucknell kid that Drew was telling us about on Wednesday.
Exactly.
Okay, so there you go. There's your Houston Texans.
Poor T.J.
The fun thing will be watching Nuke and Will Fuller. They've got two, you know, world-class receivers. Nuke is a Pro Bowler, and it'll be interesting. I imagine it will be no doubt that the first-team All-Pro receivers will be Julio Jones and Antonio Brown. They will be first, one and two. The question is, who will be next? And you got to think that Nuke's got a pretty darn good shot at being second team all pro.
I don't know. Some might say he's having a better season than Julio, man.
Well, right. So you concur. He'll be all pro, first or second team.
Nuke, yeah, I think he will be for sure. Absolutely. You look at they are banged up at tight end. Got some audio playing here. Okay. They are banged up at tight end as well. They are hurting there. Tom Savage is obviously not going to start this game. T.J. Yates will make, I think, his second start this season.
Backup quarterback's a kid from Old Dominion, by the way. Just, you know, this is where we are with this team right now. And I do think Drew's point was right. It's like watching if everybody saw the clips that Dave and I played with Jimmy Garoppolo, which everybody's been so effusive in their praise of what a leader Garoppolo looks like, that pretty much guaranteed his Hall of Fame enshrinement, I think, from people's reaction to these video clips. If you watch that game, what was so interesting was the enthusiasm of the fans for a team that's winning their third game of the season. There's hope there. And I do think, as bad as things are for the Texans right here, as we heard from Drew, when people got the glimpse of Deshaun Watson, nobody's throwing the towel on the organization with all the injuries they've suffered and the hope at the quarterback position. I think, this team next year, they can turn around and win double-digit games. So it's while it looks awfully sparse on the offensive side right now, you can bet that they will, in the draft, go heavy on the offensive line, maybe add a running back to this group. They already got the receivers. If their tight ends are healthy, they're pretty good. It could turn around pretty quickly.
Yeah, and look, Lamar Miller, I've never been a huge Lamar Miller fan, and Alfred Blue is just a guy.
Got our boy Jordan Todman.
Yeah, watch him break. I don't know, I haven't looked. Have they used him on kickoffs?
I don't know, man. I'll look while you talk.
But he might not even be active this week. Todman's returned two kickoffs for 43 yards with a long of 23 this year. Looks like Thompson been returning a lot of kickoffs for them. So I don't know. Todman might not even get a helmet for this game. Kobe Hamilton, didn't he dress for the first time this past week?
I think he has been dressed a couple times. I think, yeah.
So we know quite a bit about him. I know they promoted David Quisenberry from their practice squad, I think, this week. I don't think they expect him to start, but he might be up in a next man up situation for them. Look, the thing they're going to have to do is sort of what the Jacksonville Jaguars did many weeks ago. They're going to have to get some, and we took the turnover option away from Drew when we had him on, and he rightfully reclaimed that.
That was funny. That was funny. Drew, aside from turnovers, how do you expect him to win? Well, how about turnovers?
Yeah, and look, you can't blame them in that situation. I think they are going to have to get some short fields. However they need to do it, they're going to be able to run the football with a guy like, Lamar Miller in there. And that's going to be tough to do. If they get into any third and six or seven situation, man, third and six or longer situation, you really have to think that they're in a world of trouble here. You just try to find DeAndre Hopkins and get him the football however you can in this game, even if it's throwing short of the chains. I think, obviously you're going to take some deep shots down the field on them, but DeAndre Hopkins is going to have a huge, huge game. And I think Lamar Miller is going to have 80 or 90 yards on the ground in addition for this offense. And look, we've said the same thing about the Bears earlier this year and Minnesota.
Packers and the Colts and everybody else.
Yeah, Minnesota. We already have bought tickets to this movie before, so don't be shocked if after the first quarter it's Texans 10, Steelers 3. Don't fire anybody. Take time, go get some popcorn, and get your jujus and stuff like that, because it won't be over at that point. Now, when you look at defensively with this team, I look forward to watching Zach Cunningham play, David. I really do. I look forward to watching Jadeveon Clowney having some nice matchups against, and we haven't even got to the Steelers injury report. Make sure we do that here in a little bit here, against a guy like Alejandro Villanueva. I think that'll be a fun matchup to watch. Outside of that, though, I know Cunningham's having a good rookie season, and Brian Cushing back from his roid sessions and all, this team can still be run on. They can be run on when looking at the all 22. And I expect a lot of Le'Veon Bell in this game, and especially with Antonio Brown expected to miss it. I think you run and run a lot and try to wear these guys down as much as you can in the first half. and game over, you know, hopefully at that point. Don't do anything. Don't try to throw the football 35 times in this game is what I'm kind of getting at here. I think you should be able to run on these guys at will, and it will be interesting to see a few of these matchups. Their secondary, I know Drew said that our linebacking core is probably the best, you know, the inside linebacker is probably the best of this unit. I don't know. You know, I kind of like a little bit of the things that they're doing defensively in the secondary there as well. But overall, this is a depleted defense due to the injuries that they've had this season. So, you know, the Steelers should be able to run all over them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching Clowney play and Zach and a few of these guys. It's always fun to watch Nuke and Will Fuller. You know, we'll see. You know, I don't want to see him catching 40-yard passes behind Cam Sutton and and Artie.
It might even be Joe Hayden this week, Dave.
Yeah, Joe, right. It will be Joe Hayden. By the way, and this isn't today's topic for conversation, but obviously next week the Steelers will be playing at home, and it will be a lot of guys, just the nature of the business, their last regular season home game. Of course, the Steelers are going to be home for a playoff game. We're all assuming that's going to be the case. Joe Hayden's going to be an interesting offseason conversation. Did Cam Sutton, has he done enough to think that maybe he could be a starter? And then does that make a Joe Hayden salary something that you don't want to, you know, deal with going forward? And plenty of other guys to have those conversations about. But, yeah, let's get to the Dave, because we didn't have an injury report, obviously, on Wednesday, and there wasn't one. What's the latest?
Well, you had two people that did not practice. Antonio Brown, obviously one of those. He's not playing with that calf injury. Ramon Foster, as Mike Tomlin had said on Tuesday, showed up on Monday, I believe, with concussion-like symptoms, was placed in protocol, and then evidently is still there because he did not practice. Now, here's a question for you, David. Ramon Foster had his media session with Tuesday morning on his radio show. I think he had a sit down with Missy Matthews this week called FaceTime with Foster. If players are in protocol, aren't they not allowed to talk to the media, or is it subject to whether or not they want to?
Good question. I think we have heard in the past that they won't be made available to the media. And then I think there might be something, you know, stage of protocol, you know, it could very well be the case that Ramon Foster has not been diagnosed with a concussion. Being in the protocol does not mean that you have a concussion. It's you go into the protocol if you show any concussion like symptoms. Now, obviously, the majority of time, it's determined that, yes, the player did, you know, sustain a concussion. But not always the case. So I don't have an answer. Ramon, you know, these guys with their radio shows, they get paid. They probably feel some obligation to, if they can make that. But I know when in the past, when Antonio Brown's been injured in whatever form, you know, he has, you know, obviously with everybody's understanding, been excused from those obligations. So I don't have a good answer for you, but yes, I understand the question. I think you're correct.
I think they call that the Madden rule of the concussion protocol, actually. And I thought there was something in there that they couldn't talk to the media while in protocol. Obviously not a huge deal here, but it just caught me by surprise that here he is having his radio show and has sit down with Missy Matthews and all like that. In short,
And then, by the way, just for everybody knows, I assume who Missy is, but Missy's that's internal now with the Steelers. So they're making him available internally, which is interesting. You would think that that's a positive, obviously a positive sign for Ramon's health.
Right. And the last two games here against the Texans and the Browns are obviously meaningful. So will Ramon play? I have no idea. If he will. I mean, obviously, if he's healthy enough, he should, right? I mean, you don't if he gets out of protocol, he should play, right?
if he is cleared from protocol and Mike feels like he's done the necessary work in practice, he'll play. Yeah.
And if he doesn't, of course, it'll be B.J. Finney in there at left guard. So Antonio Brown, Ramon Foster, only two players not to work on Thursday. We'll see. Obviously, Antonio Brown's out. We'll see what happens with Ramon on the final 2 days, Friday and Saturday. And then three guys that practice fully, Joe Hayden, Vance McDonald, and Tyler Matakavich. Matakavich, obviously, we expect him to play as he played with that same shoulder injury last week and played 17 snaps on special teams. Joe Hayden, everybody now expects him to play. This will be his first game back from the fractured fibula that he suffered in week 10. And then Vance McDonald, assuming they have a bubble wrap suit large enough for him, looks like he might be able to play, and boy, I don't know if I'd rush him back so soon, to be quite honest with you. They need that guy healthy for the playoffs, talking about Vance McDonald. But things are shaping up for him after missing that last game with a shoulder injury. So overall, you know, of course, James Conner did go on IR this past week. Overall, health-wise, you know, not a bad situation here, you know, for the Steelers, especially when you look at the Texans injury report from Thursday. It has 16 guys on it. You can tell Bill O'Brien spent time with the New England Patriots.
Yeah. Tyler Matakavich would be an interesting guy to watch this week. You would think, and I think people rightly pointed this out and asked us, you know, if Sean Spence is – if the Steelers are willing to take Sean Spence off the waiver wire where he has, you know, been sitting at home for an extended period of time and plug and play him, why wasn't he on the roster earlier? It's a legitimate question. And the short answer is obviously with Ryan Shazier healthy, they felt like Matakavich and LJ Ford are better special teams players than Sean Spence. That's, you know, full stop. That's the answer to the question. Obviously, Shazier's situation everybody's aware of, and you know, I was always surprised that Matakavich was ahead of L.J. Fort in the base defense when they were going through the preseason and what we've seen. And so we saw that. And now Matakavich playing last week and being available this week, it will be interesting to see who gets all the burn. And I'm just assuming it's going to be Sean Spence again because he's played the last 2 weeks. And obviously he was better this week than he was against the Ravens. I don't know what to expect, but I would assume Spence, now having played 2 weeks, will continue to play.
Well, I think it's a very fair question that people are asking when it comes to Spence, because you're one play away from that third linebacker being on the field, and you can make an argument. But Matakavich may be a better, kind of a buck strong side, inside linebacker, than say Spence and LJ Fort. But then, you know, then again, who would be the better kind of Mac player? Now, Matakavich obviously was prepared, to play both of those roles. You know, let's face it. I mean, the guy just doesn't move. The guy is a downhill player. He's a good downhill player. He proved that at Temple. I don't want to take it. And look, you want to talk about special teams demon? That is Tyler Matakavich. He is a downhill player, though, and much in the same form where Vince Williams is a better downhill player. Now, Vince, I think, has proved a lot of people wrong in some of the other aspects of being able to move out in space better than what maybe some of us originally thought. Is Matakavich there? And also, you know, you would think Matakavich has enough practice snaps. I guess where I'm going with this is this will be damning, I think, to Tyler Matakavich if...
Correct. If he can't regain the role when he's healthy.
Right.
Now, we don't know that he's 100% healthy. You know, maybe... You would think if you're on special teams, the requirements of what you need to do are identical to what you need to do as an inside linebacker. You got to take on blockers and shed blocks and make plays. So you think if he can play his role on special teams, you would think he'd be healthy enough to play his role as linebacker. So that will be something to pay attention to. We both expect Joe Hayden to get the start, but, you know, it's not 100%. You would think it'd be clear if he's 100% healthy, but as I suggested last week, I felt like the week that Hayden got back would be a practice week. It'd take at least a full week of practice for him to to be in a position to then practice and start. And he's obviously at that position. Look, if all things being equal, you're definitely going to start Joe Haden over Cam Sutton. There's no question about that. And we'll just see if he's 100% healthy.
Yeah, and look, I'd play Hayden. I mean, if Hayden's ready to go, I'm playing him the whole game, though.
If he's able to go the whole game, stamina wise.
Right. So, absolutely there. Okay, and look, let's not use whether or not Matakevich plays in this game against the Texans as a measuring stick just yet, because we don't know the severity, as you said, of the shoulder injury. So let's give him a couple weeks, though. But if come playoff time, he's not in there and Sean Spence is, then I really think it is damning at that point to not only Matakevich but LJ Fort as well too, you know.
Yep.
And look, I mean, it's still too early to make a prognosis about Ryan Shazier and his future. But David, did you read the report by Jeremy Fowler quoting Ryan Shazier's father yesterday?
Did not see it. No.
All right. You know, he basically, you know, Ryan Shazier, you know, talking about weather in a storm with Ryan. He called what, you know, the early stages that what they were weathering a Category 5 storm. So, you know, read it.
Yeah, he had spinal surgery. I'm sure that, you know, you can imagine being a loved one, a son, God forbid, anybody have to go through what he went through. That's you don't know the answers. So, and Dave and I don't know anymore. So just, you know, you can imagine the pain that parents go through in a situation. I can't imagine the pain that parents go through in that situation. So I'm not at all surprised that he used catastrophic type terminology.
Yeah, and you know, we obviously don't know what the long term future is with him, and you know, several people have asked. Look, they did pick up his fifth year option during the off season, and that's fully guaranteed from injury and injury only. So, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind as well too.
And look, we've discussed this before. This isn't, you know, the draft's going to come around. We're going to talk about positions in the draft. And inside linebacker was a high priority position for the Steelers, just because just the reasons we've talked about: lack of depth when it's Matakevich and Fort behind your two inside guys. So obviously, Shazier's injuries just shines a spotlight on that position as a place the Steelers are going to focus on in the draft.
All right, Marcus Gilbert, either on Saturday or Sunday, being as how the game is on Monday, should be put back on the 53-man roster.
I would think that's a Saturday move with the Sunday workday and Christmas and all. I'd probably get that out of the way.
Yeah, he
may be today.
It's going to be Saturday or Sunday, I think. Who goes? Matt Filer? I don't think you're going to cut Daniel McCullers, are you?
Big Dan's made it this far. I don't think he goes. I think your risk guys are Cody Sensabaugh, Matt Filer.
I mean, Sensabaugh's got some experience, unfortunately. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, Filer would be first on my list, and Sensabaugh would be second. Obviously, you're not going to do anything with Justin Houston. It'd be interesting to see if the Steelers dress five wide receivers. Is Justin Houston going to dress?
Hunter.
You know, we're 25 weeks into him being a Steeler? Justin Hunter, will they dress five wide receivers? There's a possibility they won't. So I imagine they will, but there's a possibility they won't.
And the thing is James Harrison even in the conversation, David?
I mean, it would be so incredibly insulting that that might actually play a role in the decision to not do that.
Okay.
I mean, it's J.J. Wilcox all of a sudden in the conversation. I mean, you know.
Well, you would think you'd want to carry four safeties, though, you know?
Yeah, just tell them you're going to, you know, I don't know if you tell them you sign them back. There are not a lot of other candidates. You know, Stephen Ridley, they wouldn't have moved him up if they were going to move him off. So he's not in the conversation. It's not going to be a tight end. So you've got Filer on the offensive side, and Hunter would be the only two even guys you could discuss on the defensive side. The guys you could discuss are McCullers, I mean, I guess, you know, if we're going to talk about guys who are inactive, it'd be Harrison and then, you know, Wilcox and Sensabaugh. Would you risk one of those guys with some experience? And the answer is probably no, no, and no to any of those. So I think Filer is the big leader in the clubhouse.
What about LJ Fort?
He brings you something on special teams, and you just lost one guy. So I don't think you'd risk it.
Yeah,
would Moats be next in line? Like, if you were gonna cut a linebacker and it wasn't James Harrison, would it be Arthur Moats?
Yeah, you just use them just enough on special teams, though, David.
It's like five snaps this past week on special teams.
But James Harrison doesn't even see the field, you know. I think it's gonna be Filer because look, I mean, if Filer.
He's clearing waivers.
I don't know about that this time of year. If there's one guy I want on my end of – I'll put it to you this way. Look at what the Houston Texans just did, David. The Steelers cut Jake Rogers from their practice squad, and they picked him up right away and put him on their practice squad. Okay?
Yep.
Filer, look at how banged up the Houston Texans offensive line is right now. This is the time of year where you want to bring in guys with versatility –
I do think they'll offer Filer the spot on the practice squad. Like, look, we'll sign you Monday to the practice squad. So I think that'll be in his back pocket. So the answer's got to be if somebody signs him to the 53, which again we've seen. You know, the Browns made three moves when the minute Dorsey came in the door to raid, and it is the time you raid. So you know it's possible.
I'll bet you a caramel frappe.
Yeah, I might be out there for the Super Bowl. By the way, this is the first time I've told you this. I might be out there for the Super Bowl, so we'll have a date over a frappe. I'll meet you, man. We'll do it live, man. We're gonna video.
Oh Lord, that'll be the worst produced show ever in the history of mankind. I'll bet you a frappe that if Matt Filer is waived, he gets claimed. Okay,
at Barbary Coast.
Huh?
At Barbary Coast?
Nah, man. Look, look. You want a nice locals casino to go to that has a little bit of.
I've been in all of them.
The Orleans, man. The Orleans.
Orleans. Yeah. You know, Duquesne. The Dukes are at Orleans tonight. They're playing
at
the Orleans.
There's that. Yeah, they do at the Orleans Arena right there. You know, the Orleans.
I've not been in there. Is it nice?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, the Las Vegas before Las Vegas got an NHL team, they had a minor league team, the Las Vegas Wranglers, and they played.
How about we haven't talked about the Las Vegas Golden Knights. We might have to do a Vegas podcast. The Las Vegas Golden Knights tearing it up, best 14-1 at home or something insane like that.
Man, when's the last time you've been to Vegas?
It's been the longest since I turned 21, probably, or since I turned 25. It's been 2 years. So it's on the books for early 18.
Since you turned 25.
That's probably – I think my first trip to Vegas was when I was probably 25. It wasn't the day I turned 21. I think 25 is about 2000 – the day the Hard Rock was built is about when I was one of the first people ever in the Hard Rock.
25 or 55?
Turned 25.
Jesus, you haven't been. I thought you'd been out here since then.
No. I'm saying it's the longest period of time that I haven't been, which is now 2 years. And it used to, since I was 25, since the first time I went. I went, you know, three or four times a year for 20 years.
Oh, okay. You confused me there. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is an incredible, incredible town. Plus, now, David, you could buy weed here.
I'll have some beers. You'll have a frappe, and I'll have beers. We'll both be good. We'll watch the keynote numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And okay, let's see. Anything else we have to wrap up here here's something else to consider about Filer. I mean, with Gilbert back, man, Hawkins is going to now be on the inactive list. So you would have Filer and Hawkins on the inactive list. No sense in that happening, really. In my opinion, because you're going to have eight. Let's go down real quick. You're going to have Dobbs on the inactive list. You're going to have AB on the inactive list. You're going to have Hawkins on the inactive list. McCullers on the inactive list. Probably J.J. Wilcox or with Hayden back, Does Sensabaugh go to the inactive list along with
James Harrison or Arthur Motes? Is going to, you know, one of them is going to be inactive. So
right. So I think that narrows it down. So I think it almost has to be Filer that you waived in order to make room for Gilbert there. Okay, I guess there are some other games this week.
Yeah, Saturday NFL again this weekend. Maybe not overly compelling. The Colts go to the Ravens. I thought, you know, Dave and I were both been wrong in our AFC North Browns upsets the past few weeks with him picking them to beat the Bengals, me picking them to beat the Ravens. The Ravens have done what they needed to do. Interesting. They, you know, their defense, we've talked about it, and it's hard to think wonderful things about the Ravens defense if the only time you saw them play was when the Steelers put up 39 the other week. But they have had a very good season defensively. They're 13.5-point favorites at home, Dave, Saturday at 4:30 against the Colts. What do you think?
That defense of theirs, man, I know that's a big number for a kind of a struggling offense and all. And look, I know lay it. Lay the point.
I'll go on the other side for the heck of it. See what Jacoby can do for the Colts. The Vikings go to the Packers. People know Aaron Rodgers played last week, shut down, put back on the air this week. For the Vikings, these games matter. They're looking for home field advantage throughout to be the number one seed in the NFC West. Dave, I like the Vikings here. -9 is a lot of points on the road, and I know Hundley's played better of late, but I think I like the Vikings.
Yeah, I'm laying the points here too.
Detroit goes to Cincinnati. Has Detroit been officially eliminated?
Seemed like I heard that. I'll have to look at the official standings.
I feel like I know the Packers have, but the Bengals certainly look like they've rolled over now. Unfortunately, you know, Dave and I aren't wishing guys get hurt, and I know Vontaze Burfict is nobody's favorite guy, but he's going to miss his third straight game due to a concussion that hit with Juju, it appears. I'll take the Lions -4 on the road.
No, I don't. They're the number 7 seed, David. Detroit.
Yeah, so they're in it. Yeah. So I don't understand this line. It opened at 5, and I thought it would go immediately to 7. It did go to 6, and now it's back down to 4. So I'll take the Lions.
I'll take the Lions. Lay the points too.
Chargers -7 at the Jets. You know, the Chargers really hurt themselves. Bryce Petty's playing quarterback. That's all you need to know. Give me the Chargers.
I'm with you there. Lay the points.
Rams. I love the Rams. I love the Rams. I love the Rams. They are so much fun to watch. Give me the Rams -7 at Tennessee.
And boy, Tennessee, they need to win. They need help, man.
Talk about the wonderful seasons of Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, and they have been absolutely wonderful. Boy, those two guys have taken a big step forward while Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota have taken steps back this year. Interesting, you know, top two quarterbacks in the drafts.
Well, two defensive coordinators going against each other. Great ones. Wade Phillips versus Dick LeBeau here, right? But, man, Todd Gurley just runs over people. Man, we're taking a lot of road teams and laying some lumber, aren't we? Give me the Rams.
The Browns, Joe Hayden's rooting for the Browns. If you're a Steelers fan, probably should be rooting for the Browns. Get the monkey off the back. They're getting 6.5 in Chicago. I will take the Browns +6.5. Kaiser made another incredibly poor judgment throw in that game last week. But, you know, the Browns aren't a terrible football team. They don't have any wins, but, you know, they're comparable to the teams at the bottom of the league, like Indianapolis, Chicago. Let's see if they can get one. Give me 6.5 at least.
Boy, I hope none of our listeners are stuck watching this one. I'm not convinced Cleveland wins this, but I think they can cover it, David. So give me a road team again covering.
Do the Bucs make a game of it in Carolina with getting 10? Carolina's. I think if you're in Vegas and Dave is, I think the value for the Super Bowl bets. If you want a prop bet at, you know, I think the Carolina's like 22-1, the Rams are 12-1, and the Chiefs are 25-1. If you got a, you know, a 10 spot or a 50 spot or something you want to put on long shots, get on Carolina to win the Super Bowl. Dave, I'll take them -10.
That's a big number in kind of a divisional game. I shouldn't do this, but once again, I'm going to take the road team and give me the points there.
The Falcons and the Saints. They did it 2 weeks ago, and the Saints really screwed it up. This time they're laying 6 at home. I don't think they screw it up, and they'll have Kamara hopefully for the whole game. Give me the Saints minus six. That sounds crazy, but I'm doing it.
Yeah, but boy, this one should be a good one. Right now, Atlanta's the number six seed as well, too, in there, and I believe they can still catch the Saints in here as well, too, for the division, right? Yeah, they can.
Yep.
I don't know why. Give me Atlanta to pull the upset here.
Three-team dogfight in that maybe the best division in football. Redskins minus three at home against the Broncos. Broncos playing better here. We've seen signs of life from the Broncos a little bit, but I'll take the Redskins.
I'll take the road team later points. What are you showing in that?
You're getting three if you're taking the Broncos.
I'm taking the Redskins laying the points.
Yeah, they're home. They're home. Minus three. Chiefs minus 10.5 hosting the Dolphins. I think the Chiefs have it together. I think they're going to roll into the playoffs here. I'll take the Chiefs in a big win over Miami.
I bet Miami makes it a little bit closer than the Chiefs would like it to, with the late score maybe. So give me Miami on the road plus those points.
I think the Bills are going to give the Patriots a battle. I don't think they're going to win this game, but 11.5 feels like too many. That line's come down just a hair from where it opened. I think it opened at 12. Give me the Bills at 11.5 to you know, grind a ground attack and make a game of it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think they play them a little closer. And look, they frustrated Gronk the last time a little bit there. Maybe they can do it again. I obviously don't think they can upset New England, but keep it close enough to cover that number, maybe.
You want an interesting game that doesn't have, you know, it has some ramifications, obviously, for Steeler fans. The Jags go to San Francisco, and we talked about earlier, I mentioned Garoppolo and, you know, the great game-winning drive and kind of what he did in the fourth quarter and the effusive and well-deserved early praise for him. Dave, they're getting four at home. Is that enough against the Jags?
Jimmy Garoppolo is going to win a Super Bowl in San Francisco before his career is over.
I saw you say that. That's –
You agree? Okay. You agree or no?
Well, it's easy to – you should always bet against things like that, so I'll say no.
All right. Double or nothing on the frappe.
when we're 70.
Look, I don't think San Francisco will win this outright. I think they can. I mean, at home, Jacksonville coming cross country. I think San Francisco can keep this close, though. So give me San Francisco plus the points at home.
I am fully on the Blake Bortles bandwagon, playing the best football of his career the last month. And this is the Jimmy Garoppolo welcome to the best defense in the NFL. Give me the Jags. Giants at Cardinals. Blaine Gabbert gets benched. Is it Skelton? I don't even know. Who's playing quarterback? Who's their Stanton? I don't know. Who's out there? I don't even know who they have in Arizona these days.
Stanton, right?
Stanton. Good gracious. Give me, I don't know. Giants are getting 3.5 on the road. They're playing a little better, but they're awful. Give me Arizona. Who knows? I'm not watching it. I'm not betting it. I'm not watching it. Not doing anything with that game.
Oh, boy. One last hurrah for Eli Manning here, David. Give me the Giants to not only plus the points, but an outright win.
Certainly looks like the Legion of Boom has had their last hurrah. It has been boom, sis, boom, ba, as what it's been. And some discord, apparently, out in Seattle as well, as this thing kind of fractures here at the end of the season around what was a hell of a good season by Russell Wilson. But, you know, again, people, you know, I think rightly so, they point out the ups and downs of Russell Wilson. And there's some of those things of being a smaller quarterback and in the pocket. And if you talk to guys who watch a lot of film, as good as Russell Wilson is at extending plays and being great, and he's, you know, he's as good at that, you know, these young quarterbacks with their mobility and his brilliance, their smart football mind, he's been doing great stuff, but he doesn't always see it all from the pocket. Zeke Elliott back. I think this would be a very festive crowd at 425 on Christmas Eve in Dallas. I think the Cowboys blow him out, Dave.
Why did this open at 2.5 and jump? Well, I'm showing five.
Maybe Zeke.
Okay. Boy, that big of a point push because of that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I don't know who all now the Seahawks have put defensively on the IR. I haven't really been paying close attention, but all those guys are banged up, and maybe a couple of them aren't playing.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I'll go with Dallas at home to cover. I don't have a lot of confidence there.
Okay, Raiders Eagles, Christmas night. So after you're filled with your turkey dinner and have opened all your presents at Santa Bracha, watch the Eagles trash the Raiders. I'll take the Eagles -9.
Yeah, I'll take the points on the road with Oakland. I think they make this closer than many people think it'll be.
All right, Dave, Christmas Day, 4:30. The Steelers go down to Houston. And, you know, we talk, you know, you hear us talk all the time. There's no such thing as trap games in the NFL. There might be letdown games. It's Christmas Day. I don't really know what to expect from the Steelers in this game. I really don't. And I don't have any sense of this. I'm going to take the Steelers. I'm going to take them in the cover, but maybe an unexciting cover at Pittsburgh 27, Houston 17.
Boy, my number is very, very similar to that. I don't think, you know, obviously without AB there, and as I said earlier, I think you're going to see a lot of Le'Veon Bell. Yeah, you know, this is just the type of game that you want to win and get the heck out and back home.
Exactly, exactly.
And healthy and all like that. So you do enough to win. 27-13, Steelers. They cover by two scores, and we'll get more nasty emails next week, I'm sure.
On a semi-serious close, you know, sometimes we complain about this stuff, but Dave and I are honored and blessed and thrilled and whatever adjective you'd like to throw in there to be able to do this podcast, to be, you know, healthy and follow a team that's fun to follow, that's been a great organization. You know, that has a rabid fan base. And that's why I know that's why people, you know, email us. And 99% of their 95% of the emails we get are awesome. And the donations are fantastic. And we love doing this. And we appreciate everybody out there who listens, even when it's not always complimentary or it's antagonistic. Hey, it comes with the territory. We love doing it. And we thank you. And I know I speak for Dave and wishing everybody, whatever your religious persuasion is, but a very Merry Christmas and a happy holidays. And thanks for letting us do this and letting us be part of your following the Steelers.
And people keep sending me the other angle of this Jesse James, the end of this Jesse James touchdown with, you know, that shows the right hand of Jesse underneath the football. I've seen it, folks. That's a great shot by the photographer that got that, by the way. But it does not change my opinion on any of this. If we had video from this angle, you know, that's floating around right now of that, you'd be, you know, it would give us a better idea. I can, for every one that you people send me of this, I can send you another one from a different angle that leads to some questions. So I, you know, that's why it's not even worth talking about. You know, my decision's made. I think the referees made the right call on the field with Jesse James. And look, I've seen all these photos. I'm on Twitter all day.
God, you went back there. I say a nice little Christmas holiday thing, and
know,
you go right back to. You went back to Jesse James.
Ripping the bandages off. Look, that's the only way my dad always, you know, always told me it can't heal unless you get air to it. Now, why the hell the Mercurochrome what was put on there to burn the living hell out of you, I don't know. But, okay. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We got a few more donations since we last talked on Wednesday. Thank you for that. As the great Oral Roberts used to say, something good is going to happen to you. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. Be careful. David and I will get back on it Tuesday, David. Tuesday next week?
Yes.
All right.
And rest in peace, Dick Enberg, Dave, a guy you and I grew up watching football with.
Yeah, never forget the Broncos and Ernest Byner game, the fumble, him calling that game.
The Browns. The Browns, too.
Yeah,
the Browns.
Yeah, the Browns. And never will forget a few of those legendary calls that Dick Enberg had during his career. Called a lot of football games during our youth there. So you and I on Tuesday to discuss what happened with Houston and Steelers. For those of you who want to donate, SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button up right navigational bar.
Merry Christmas, as always. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.